Florida Basketball, our podcast, is brought to you by the Gatorverse, an exclusive community dedicated to connecting University of Florida fans and student-athletes. Members receive access to exclusive autographed collectibles, real-life experiences, giveaways, VIP events, rewards, and athletes receive a majority of revenue from sales of their collectibles. That's the way that NIL is supposed to work. To find out more about becoming a Gatorverse member and Lockermania, visit Gatorverse.io. That's Gatorverse.io. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South, joined by Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com, among other places. Eric, SEC Media Day went down this week. And yeah, I mean, the season is nearly upon us. I couldn't think of a player who was number 19 for Florida and did not feel like doing more than a 20-minute deep dive into that. So the string of consecutive days with some Gator player, including Thunder Dan Werner, came to a grinding halt yesterday. But maybe I can find a number 18. We're 18 days away from hoops.
Yeah, that's like a definite blind spot for me with all my like sports, I guess, fandom is like numbers just like do not register with me whatsoever. So I will not be able to help you. I would honestly struggle to tell you anyone's number from last year on the Gators, much less, you know, historically. So yeah, won't be able to help you, but I appreciate that you've been putting out that content to make things seem near. And yeah, you being at SEC Media Day really made it feel like the season was upcoming as well.
Yeah, man, a lot of good stuff from Media Days. Some coaches that, you know, I mean, it was really like they ran the gamut from like excited, which is kind of the Todd Golden vibe. You know, like Todd seemed, let's get out there and let's just go. To, you know, Lamont Paris just sort of, he should have worn sunglasses because he was keeping all the haters out all day. To Cal, who is getting like really professorial about NIL in weird ways. And you know, I think maybe seemed kind of tired of answering questions about lack of Kentucky success. I wonder if the pressure is getting to him a little bit. And then, you know, kind of outlandish. Nate Oates just feeling really disrespected by a media ranking in almost all his sessions. And it was just like, okay, I mean, you got picked to finish fifth in a really good league. Like, why is that? Why are you so upset about this? But yeah, I mean, it kind of ran, like I said, ran the gamut of emotions and opinions. Really, really impressed by Will Richard and Tyrese Samuel, who I thought represented Florida well. Just two guys that are super easy to cheer for no matter what happens this year.
Yeah, it's kind of funny in the transfer portal world to see who teams send to SEC media or, you know, any conference media days, because it used to be that, you know, you'd send your guys that were third or fourth year players that had been in the program for 3 or 4 years, and they kind of knew everyone at the league. But just seeing who everyone sent, and again, this isn't just the SEC, but this is a good example where, like, I think there was a lot of players and coaches meeting other players and coaches for the first time with a bunch of newcomers. But still, I think it was good to send Samuel because, like you said, you can see that he has the qualities that really work at a setting like that. And again, it's just baffling to me. And I don't know if there's like SIDs and communications people from all these programs cringing, but like these coaches need media training, not like again, like you said, talking about some people who are just had poorly worded adversarial answers. And, you know, even like you said, Todd Golden just was like energetic, optimistic. Like, why would you not be anything but that at media? Right. You know what I mean? Like, I'm happy to see Todd Golden like understands how media works, which is something that clearly a lot of these other coaches just don't. And I thought it was not a great look for the league. And I can understand why there was a lot of fan bases who are not particularly happy. And again, just some of the quotes that were coming out, like, again, nothing that would be you know, damaging or offensive. But even again, like, and I'm not saying this verbatim, but Calipari saying something along the lines of like, well, like, you know, we don't want guys that care about NIL. Like, it's all about like coming here to win or whatever. And it's like, hey, that was maybe true like 5 or 6 years ago. But if that's what you're selling right now, like, what you're self-selecting for why players shouldn't go to your program. So again, it's just worth a chuckle. But I'm sure it would be hard for some SID to go up to a couple of the more veteran coaches in the league and say like, hey, maybe we should prep you a little bit for what's going to go on at media day. But not surprised, but just, you know, rolling my eyes and chuckling at a lot of the things said. Happy that Todd Golden, again, like I would say objectively handled himself much, much better than, I'm trying to think of a coach I thought was better. But, you know, Todd Golden was definitely one of the better ones. And, you know, like you said, I thought that Will Richard and Tyre Samuel were good as well. And again, I thought all the players were really good from other teams as well. It was just, I just had to jump in with some of these coaches when you were leading in with how some of them were approaching the whole event.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was weird, Eric. I mean, like, Bruce Pearl is great, you know, and he was funny and engaging, and you can see why he recruits well, even at Auburn, which is not the easiest place to recruit to, you know, and I think, you know, his comments about Calipari were hilarious. Like, they asked him, you know, hey, you've got a veteran team at Auburn, which, you know, I guess if you look at like talent composites, not his most talented team, but one of his older teams for Bruce. And they asked him, well, would, you know, other teams are so young, like Kentucky, and he kind of interjected and nobody feels sorry for John. You know, he said he has like 15 McDonald's All-Americans, like, you know, boo-hoo, I have a bunch of freshmen. and I thought that was great. And he was, yeah, it was just deeply rich to hear Calipari be very professorial about NIL. And, you know, I mean, on the show, like, people that have listened for a long time know that I traditionally like Cal a lot, you know, as a person. I think he's interesting and funny. I was a little surprised. I mean, you know, especially for somebody that got big-time recruits in the pre-NIL era in ways that, you know, were sort of old-school college basketball, but getting shuffle players from AAU coaches who he had relationships with that, you know, were either slightly above board or not really above board, like Julius Randle, you know, is the one that Florida fans obviously will think about because he was considered a Gator lock for so long. But I mean, I think, it's just strange. And then Nate Oates, that one was the one that was just eye-opening to me. It was just this adversary. Like, it's clear that he's still has some issues with the media over the Brandon Miller stuff. And, you know, in my view, it's sort of like, Nate, you know, I hope that the SID there needs to either like control that situation better, which I guess you can't really do at media days because the coaches have to appear, or, you know, Nate's media training, if he's had some, which I would imagine he has, isn't working. And some of that is like colored a little bit by the fact that I cover football and like Saban is so brilliant at all of this. So it's an even more stark contrast when the basketball coach who's had some success is just totally clueless in his media interactions.
Like I know some people will maybe say like, oh, well, you know, if you're bringing up Nick Saban and like, maybe that's unfair, but like, I don't really think it is. Like, I don't think like it's not hard to not be adversarial. And it's funny too, because I mean, he was salty with everyone, including his own team. He actually had one of the quotes of the media day when he said something along the lines of like, well, it's going to be good this year to not have a point guard that you need to teach effort or something along those lines. He said, you know, he said something along the lines about like, well, at least now we have a point guard that's going to try and like effort won't be a problem. So like, it wasn't just the media he was bristling with, it's not difficult to like not do that. So like, yes, I'm, you know, Saban's excellent, but it's like, hey, it's also just like this. I don't feel like the bar is that high that some of these people could be much, much better with media. And again, it's great that football money has really taken the SEC basketball product to a high level. But I do think at some point, basketball is probably going to need to take seriously their product. And part of that is not just, hey, let's bring an intense talent on the floor. It's going to be like, hey, can we actually like market our product acceptably to the point where maybe more casual basketball fans that are football fans are like interested. And I think a lot of a lot of what was said in media day would not be at all endearing to maybe a casual fan thinking about whether they want to check out some SEC basketball. In fact, it would probably be the other side of things. And that's where it was good that Bruce Pearl, who you never know what you're going to get from him, but I would say he brought some levity and humor and things like that. So yeah.
No. And by the way, so I'm not just harsh to coaches, Eric. I want to criticize the media, myself included. Although to be fair, I just didn't get called on for Chris Beard. I had my hand up from the beginning of the press conference, and you know, I really don't know, because I haven't, it's not like I've said, maybe I have on Florida Basketball Hour, and maybe in some weird universe, the Ole Miss SID was aware of things I've said about Chris Beard on Florida Basketball Hour. Who knows? But it sucked to not get called on for that, because no one asked Chris Beard anything about his dismissal from Texas. So an F to the media for the Chris Beard press conference, which was just softball after softball about how he's won everywhere in his first year. And just, I mean, it was a terrible press conference, terrible. Beard was gushing about how he feels like he has the trust of the players already, and he loves his athletic director, and like, yeah, of course you do, man. Of course you love your athletic director. You know, so I did not get a question in, and so, you know, I'm not trying to shake accountability there. I tried to ask one, and really should have like gone to the media scrum with Beard afterwards and tried to get one on Radio Row, but that didn't happen either. So F to the media for the Beard press conference. Just really embarrassing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's just so disappointing, because like, would have definitely loved for you to be able to ask a question about that. But at the same time, like the fact that it's someone with a Florida basketball podcast credential that was the only one presumably pushing to get a comment from Chris Beard. Like again, I think that there's a lot of other people that I would be pointing the finger at. We'll see what happens the next couple weeks or months or whatever. If there's anyone, associated with Ole Miss who asked those questions, or national media members, because again, you would think that would be somewhat of a national media storyline. I don't know how much national media was there and at SEC Media Day. And if so, that's another thing to talk about and address with the product in this league, where a lot of people are saying the SEC could be the best or second best basketball league in the country. And the presence of and I'm sure there was national media there, but I think there was a lot of names that were not there. Trying to change that, I would think, would be somewhat of a priority. But yeah, I think that he should be asked some tough questions about that. I don't know if Big 12 Media Day has happened yet, but if you don't know about the Arterio Morris situation with Kansas, it's disgusting. And I think Bill Self has a lot to answer to about that. And I have a fear that he's not going to get asked the questions that he should be asked. And I love this sport more than anything, but it's certainly concerning when winning over everything gets to the point that I kind of fear that it has. And just hearing that that you could get a first year press conference situation without Beard getting asked, you know, anything about that is truly disappointing, I would say.
Yeah, no, it was. It was definitely a bummer. The Athletic had a writer there. And that was about it from a national standpoint. Like, it was a lot of regional writers. And it's hard in the South, right, to say that, like, John Clay I would consider to be a national basketball writer because he writes about Kentucky, right? But he still writes for the Lexington Herald Leader. So like, that's not a huge paper with a big circulation. So like, when the AJC sends a writer, it's not like when they send Seth Emerson or whoever they send, Mark, you know, Bradley, whoever, to SEC Media Days. So it's interesting to your point, because you've got this league that I think KenPom has second, Evan Maya has third, like could be one of the best like leagues in the country this season. I think Evan Maya has third, maybe they have him second too. But and yeah, I mean, it's like a writer from The Athletic. Like normally I thought Pat Forty would be there. He was not. So like the SI, you know, SI doesn't send somebody. These are the types of people I figured would ask tough questions to Chris Beard. And then, you know, when the Athletic writer gets called on, it's a question about like getting to know his players. And I was just like, what is happening right now? You know? So anyway, I don't want to derail a Florida basketball podcast with too much of this, but I do think it's kind of interesting, and we can do that early in the season. I saw you posted on Gator Country about the KenPom ratings. And then when you look at Evan Maya with Florida's KenPom ranking, and then look at the SEC where they're picked to finish eighth. And a lot of the questions were about if they can be tough defensively again. And the tea leaf from all of that is everybody thinks Florida's going to be able to defend. People still have questions about how they'll score.
Yeah, which I think is rightfully so coming off the year that Florida had. And you can say that for both sides of the ball. I mean, Florida was a very good defensive team without a lot of really good defensive players, in my opinion. You know, they had some decent offensive players and were very bad offensively. So I think it would be it's kind of fair to assume that they'll be good defensively when they have some better defensive players this year. And I think it's fair to say, like, well, like they clearly have a little bit more juice offensively, but what exactly is it gonna look like? Yeah, it's something that's like kind of like I always feel bad for people who put out their like rankings a little bit too early and then get kind of ripped for it and then maybe get a little bit vindicated by when these analytic rankings come out, because you know, there's a lot of people early in the offseason that had the Gators, you know, eighth or ninth, and a lot of fans were really getting after them for that. And then as soon as everything starts trickling in, first it was the preview magazines with the Almanac and Lindy's and Blue Ribbon, and I think they had the Gators like 7th, 8th, and 9th or something between the three. And now the predictive metrics come out and they all roughly have the Gators 7th, 8th, or 9th. Yeah, it's just, it seems to be kind of consensus, whether it's like the vibes based and, you know, research based humans, or whether it's the algorithmic rankings, which I think is very interesting in the world of course, transfers. That's the other thing. Here's my last media take. And I will say this about the magazines, as well as people asking questions in media, because of course everyone is taking in so much preseason content. It's like, with the exception of like one or two teams in each league, everyone has tons of transfers. So when every question to coaches starts with like, well, you got a lot of new guys this year, it's like, well, everyone does. So it's not an interesting question. Or like with the analytics, not the analytics. When you're looking at those preview magazines or CBS just gave, and I think the CBS guys are really good, really good. And I think Gary Parrish is really, really good. But he had a CBS rankings for the SEC. And for teams starting from like 4 to 5, it's like, well, these are all the new transfers. Let's see how they gel. Then it was the next team. It was like, well, they brought in a lot of transfers, so it's going to be whether or not they're able to play together. Then it was the next team. And it's like, well, I like their transfer group, but we'll have to see how they come together. And it's like, I hate that college basketball media right now has been reduced to like, well, we'll wait and see. Like, it was one thing when, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when like Nevada brings in like 5 transfers and 4 of them are going to start. And that's like, groundbreaking, and everyone was like, I don't know what to do with this. Let's rank them approximately whatever and then see what happens. But like the fact that like I just don't think every question to coaches now should be, oh man, like you brought in a lot of new guys, what's it like putting them to getting them to fit together? And it's like, when you look at all these conference previews, everyone is like various. So it's also like, at some point you know, you actually did have some level of analysis, because you either put, for example, Florida, some, you know, some people had them 6 and some people had them 10. Like clearly, like you had to rank their transfer classes in some way. So like explain how you did it. And again, I'm never going to get after someone for like a quote unquote bad ranking, because every year there's guys put out like bad rankings, and then look at the SEC standings at the end of the year. They're not at all what you expected. That's how, so like, I'm no longer in the business of being like, wow, I can't believe this person has Arkansas here. But I think you should be able to like talk about why. But anyways, I'm way off track. You were talking about KenPom and where the Gators were. 39th in KenPom, I believe, unless there's been any tweaks.
Yep, 39th in KenPom, just so we fill it out. 39th in KenPom, 42nd in Evan Maya, 25th Bart Torvik.
I was going to look to one more. Let's check HaslamMetrics, because everyone is posting all the four. Just this morning on Twitter, there's a lot of discourse about like what teams had the biggest disparity between the two. But yeah, so 39, I mean, KenPom's of course the one people look at a lot more. It's good to see like, again, some variation, I suppose. But yeah, what was your reaction to the 39th in KenPom? Because I feel like a lot of people were maybe a little bit stunned by that. Oh, sorry. Here's HaslamMetrics. This is why I wanted to show HaslamMetrics. Okay. HaslamMetrics has the Gators 59th.
Whoa.
So and I can tell you why too, but
I'd love to hear that. The HaslamMetrics and the Bart Torvik range is wild. But to some extent, like, I kind of feel like that range is pretty fair for this team.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, just look at where the Gators finished last season relative to, like, what the accepted – like, I'm sure no one would have expected exactly where they finished, but if someone said, oh, their range is from 25th to 55th, I think a lot of people would be like, wow, that's a pretty wide range, and then, you know, you saw what happened. So again, and again, that wasn't all due to the Castleton injury. I will say, and this is maybe even goes back to a little bit of what we talked about last podcast, but – I think Evan Maya has, I could be wrong. We should really just have him on the show. But I'm not sure he weighs in like program momentum or program prestige.
Right.
So it's like all based on like this year's roster. KenPom has like program prestige. So that looks at like the last like 10 or 15 years to get like whatever a little bit. And then Haslam has something that's like program momentum. So it's like the last couple of years. So it would suggest, which matters more at the mid-major level, but it would look at teams like Vermont, that it's like Vermont, for example, just like every year in KenPom, they start lower than they should be. And then they always end like between 100 and 130th in KenPom. They just always do. And then you look at every year, they're like, they start the season like 175th. So right, like HaslamMetrics would say, hey, they've clearly shown over the last 5 years that, you know, they have it going there and they settle in around this area. So like, HaslamMetrics is essentially saying like it's essentially a sad look at the Florida program, saying that, hey, the last couple of years, things have gone pretty bad. They have not been anywhere close to the bubble realistically, and they keep finishing lower than what the projected rankings are. So therefore, I'm going to adjust for that. And try. So that's why I was like, I better look at HaslamMetrics, because I can almost guarantee you it's going to be lower. And look at it. It's really low.
Yeah, no, that's pretty interesting. And one would think like program prestige and program momentum for Florida would be very different. And so like you could see Florida getting like a slight program prestige bump, because if it's like, even if it's the last 10 years, like there's still a Final Four, there's an Elite Eight, there's a bunch of NCAA tournament appearances. But if it's program momentum, like, if Florida misses the tournament this year, it's 3 straight years without an NCAA tournament. If the wheels come off and Florida has another losing season, it would be the first time they've had back-to-back losing seasons since the 1980s. You know, like those types of things would be pretty interesting to kind of factor in. By the way, I didn't mean to like, cause you kind of got in one, and I'm not trying to get way off tangent, but I do think our listeners have expressed an interest in like kind of this NIL space development. And it was so interesting to hear Bob McKillop speak at a at the what? Why is the name of the conference like totally blank? Atlantic
10.
Yeah. So it was like a keynote speaker. The Atlantic 10 has like a luncheon for their media days. And then they have a keynote speaker and it was Bob McKillop, right? Like, so that's pretty cool. And he was talking to media. And so this happens like within the time that Cal is like talking about how players don't need to come to Kentucky for NIL. And, you know, this was the Bob McKillop quote, just to give you a little bit of the idea of night and day. He said, the challenge of making a successful transition in this era of college basketball is understanding we have an obligation to give the players just a small fraction of what they for years have given to us. Of course they are thinking about it. These kids are helping build programs that stay effective much longer than they are there. They put their trust in places like Davidson, for example. It's the least we can do to give back to them with extraordinary generosity. That's why this stuff is so important. That's why, of course, kids are coming places because of NIL, end quote. Bob McKillop, the teacher.
Yeah, it's I like the biggest thing I would fear as a fan of any college basketball program with a veteran coach is said coach just becoming completely out of touch with the sport and with the modern athletes. And like to hear McKillop, who is old, I forget how old.
Yeah, 73.
Yeah, 73. And to hear him being like infinitely more in touch with what the modern player is thinking about. Yeah, that's interesting. And people should listen to it. And again, like, it's just one of those things that like, you know, there's a lot of coaches out there that don't like NIL. They like having all the power. They don't like the transfer portal because they like having all the power. And it's like, there's a coach that I know that is very much like that. And I disagree with him greatly. But you would never know it with how he recruits because he understands, oh, it does not matter what I think personally. It matters what the players think. And it kills him. But like he understands that like my personal beliefs don't matter when we're recruiting a kid. Like it's so again, it's just like no matter what you think about like, oh, kids should be coming to this program because of winning, like that's all well and good for you to believe that. And even maybe you're right. But like that doesn't change what the actual kids are looking for. So that's just the thing that strikes me about that. And I also find it, I cannot help thinking coaching changes the Twitter account that kind of was one of the Scoops Twitter accounts before Trilly Donovan just dominated the space. Our good friend, Trilly Donovan. they always just joke about A10 schools and how the coaches like walk around in like Vineyard Vine polos and like Patagonia vests. So when you're like, oh, at the A10 media luncheon, I just was like, all I could think about was all the coaching changes, tweets about like Richmond and Duquesne and Davidson fans and coaches coming in like their polos and Patagonia vests.
That's awesome.
But yeah, that's yeah, again, it's just one of those things that like, when it comes to coaches talking about NIL or the transfer portal, it's like, you've got to understand what you're selling. You've got to understand the modern player. But again, I understand also some of these coaches have gotten to very high levels of prestige and with massive paychecks doing things a certain way. And it's a challenge for them to adjust. But yeah, as someone who is a little bit more of like a progressive evolve or die type viewpoint on a lot of things, I just don't know why Calipari wouldn't say, like, how hard would it have been to say like, hey, for Calipari, like, hey, we have a massive fan base who is super passionate about basketball, and we have won a lot in the last few years. We want players to come to Kentucky and have it all. Like, what's wrong with that? Like, you know, like, why would you not say that unless you're just like, yeah, it's a shocker to me. And you would and it is one of the truly like the great shockers of the NIL era is that Kentucky has not been good. Like truly, like you look at some of the rosters they have, if you'd have said 10 years ago, well, I mean, I guess it would be hard because you wouldn't know what the players' names were or whatever. But like, if you said, hey, you're not in 2011, hey, Neil, you're not going to believe this, but like in 10 years, players can get paid essentially whatever they want on the free market. And guess what? Kentucky does not have a lot of talent. It is not doing very well. You would like those things just would not register. Like it would be a, you just wouldn't believe it. There'd be no way. And you'd be like, well, who's their coach? And then I would say, oh, it's John Calipari. And then you'd say like, what? That makes even less sense that they are building rosters that don't have enough talent and aren't winning. So like, again, I truly think one of the great shockers, like, and that was one of the things when everyone was like, oh, NIL is here. Like it's going to change everything. Like the whole sport is going to look different. And it's like, you know, kind of the thought I had at the time was like, well, like before NIL, the teams that are going to get the best talent are Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, et cetera. And after NIL, the teams that are going to get the best talent are Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, et cetera. Like I didn't think it was going to change things that much. But I just like never would have guessed that Kentucky would be at the point where like there are a lot of fans who want a new head basketball coach, and the results on the floor have not been particularly interesting over the last 2 years.
Yeah. By the way, Jerry Stackhouse, another coach who I actually got first question on Jerry, and
nice,
and credited the NIL space for having the best backcourt in the country. And by the way, I love that Jerry Stackhouse just straight up was like, "I have the best backcourt in the country." I thought that ruled. Like, that's the kind of energy I needed at SEC Media Days, right? Like, yeah, he qualified it. He said, I'm just counting down the days to opening night. I asked him what a successful year looks like. That was my question. And he said, we're excited about our group. I think we returned the best backcourt in the SEC. We probably have the best backcourt in the country.
You know what, like objectively, like I hope he's right, because that take. I mean that would be a genuinely a cool story if Vanderbilt has the best backcourt in the country. Like, I mean, you can come at it from a Florida standpoint and say like you'd maybe rather they didn't, but like I think that's really cool. And talking and again talking about coaches, like the first year of Stackhouse, he was just MFing his own players in every press conference and saying right. that they weren't smart and didn't understand basketball and didn't work hard enough. And like, I don't remember anything he said about the portal or NIL, but I would imagine being at Vanderbilt, that's not a place, like maybe there would be some pushback. And then like fast forward to the way he talks about his guys now, the way he builds his team, the way they play on the court is modernized greatly. Like there's a guy that I think has probably learned how he should talk. Like, so it's like, there's a perfect example of someone completely changing his demeanor to media and I would say having good results with it. So I'm glad you were able to get that, that question in. And again, it's one of those things too. Like I love the personality of it too, because like with all due respect, he is at Vanderbilt, and I have a lot of respect for Vanderbilt, who I have picked higher than most people this year. And
yeah,
love watching them play, but it's like, he says they have the best backcourt in the country. Like, say they do, people are going to pull that quote and be like, wow, that's incredible. And back in October, he said he thinks he has the best backcourt in the country, or even if it's the best in the SEC, whatever it is. Yeah. And like, if he doesn't, no one's going to be like, wow, what a joke. It's not like it's at North Carolina and you're like, wow, how are they not better? How did this backcourt not play very well? Like, people will forget about it. So like, why not like put out somewhat measured hot takes like that, for the short-term soundbite and the, you know, possibility of something of later with like pretty low stakes.
I thought Ezra Manjon was one of the most impressive guys at Media Days that I talked to. I will also say he's not 6 feet tall. Like if he's six feet tall, I'm 6'3". And I am 6'1". I was measured again at my physical, and I made a joke this week about, because I had my birthday physical last week, and I was laughing because I said, are we really doing my height at like my age? Like I'm a man. I'm in my 40s. Like it's not like I grew, you know. Oh, we gotta check it. Okay, well, still 73 inches tall, everybody. So just happy to report that I have at least 3 inches on Ezra Manjon. Vanderbilt could list him at 6 feet if they want. He is a nice player though. Like I saw a couple late night games, Big West after dark last year, and was kind of like, dude, that guy's pretty silky. And I think any guard that plays in Stackhouse's system is going to get a Stackhouse tactics bump. So it'll be fun to watch that backcourt, even if they aren't the best in the country. Florida's backcourt, is going to play their first game this weekend in a closed-door scrimmage with Miami. Starting lineup. Should we talk about it? Let's talk about it.
People want to hear it, Neil.
All right. So Florida starters for the Miami scrimmage will be Walter Clayton starting at point guard. I'm told that Zion Pullen has won that job. Right now it'll be Walt. Should be Pullen when he gets back from the three-game suspension. But they're going to go ahead and roll out the lineup. They're going to start game one, which makes sense. The two will be Kugel. No one should be surprised there. Riley, second team, all-SEC selection. Florida Basketball Hour had a ballot, voted him first team. I know Jacob Rudner voted him first team. So a little surprised that he was second team. The three will be Will Richard. They got Ty Samuel at the four and then Micah Hanlockton filling out the starting lineup. I was told that Edge Jarvis originally was on like some whiteboard as a starter before the summer started. And so he's gone. But I still think Eric and I talked about it last show. Like that's a 20 to 25 minute player. So like, yes, they're losing a starter. What they're really losing is a 20 to 25 minute contributor probably.
Yeah, and I mean, just like it's just someone who made the pieces fit a little better. Right. This is going to be like I mean the great storyline from this is how long will the Gators stick with two bigs and will two centers be an effective style in the SEC? So I'm really interested for that from that standpoint. But at least if they had Jarvis, it would give them the opportunity to have a bigger, more prototypical four to give a different look than the Hanlockton Samuel front court. And then I'll say somewhat of an insurance policy if that style didn't work. Of course, the kind of I was about to say resurgence, not a resurgence, but Thomas Houck and Alex Condon playing well and allegedly pushing for starting spots would have given also the Gators a chance for like some very good, different looks. Like imagining if they had Jarvis, it was like Jarvis would have been like the more prototypical, you know, maybe shoots it a little bit. I don't know how much even that, and we'll never find out now. But you know, has the size, moves pretty well. Then you would have like you want to go two centers, play bully ball. There's that opportunity. Thomas Houck. Someone who shoots the like kind of stretch four situation. And then with like Conan, someone who played the passing lanes could really like push and transition. So it would have been like a lot of just like very different looks at the four. And at least the Gators still could have several because Houck versus the two centers in front court would look very different having that shooting. Again, we'll see how much Tyree Samuel can shoot or Hanlockton for that matter. And then of course, like, I guess if Alex Condon can shoot in addition to whatever else he brings, but that had to be the most interesting one. And I mean, shouts to you and shouts to whoever honestly gave you that information, because one, it's amazing to hear the starting lineup. We wouldn't have gotten that with the previous staff, and two, to get the added context of like, oh, well, like, you know, Pullen might be the starter and like, oh, and like, you know, there was a time that we thought EJ Jarvis would start. Like getting that backstory is, we appreciate that openness for sure. That is very, very interesting stuff. I was very happy to hear you bring that to the podcast.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And I think, you know, I think, look, it makes sense on the Pullen Clayton front. Although I did, you know, so our listeners get the behind the fourth wall or whatever look. But I definitely texted Eric and said, like, I wouldn't be terribly sad if, like, Walter Clayton just crushes it in these five games. And Florida's like, Zion pulling off the bench as the sixth man.
Oh, totally.
I just kind of think that's a better fit for Zion. And I like when I think of what sixth men do, I think a little more of like bringing in Zion pulling because he can score in different ways type stuff than maybe using Walt Clayton as the sixth man.
Yeah, like Walter Clayton would not be like a change of pace guy particularly, whereas like Zion Pullen would. So it's one of the also just like time honored conversations of like, do you start your five best players or do you start a five person group that works the best and then try to get an advantage with who you bring in off the bench? Like, so I don't think this is necessarily saying this is Florida's best five players. You could even argue that if it was Pullen over Clayton, but you could also argue like that it is Florida's five best players. So it will be very interesting. Neil, I'm going to ask you a series of questions about the Tyree Samuel and Micah Hanlockton in front court. So let's say it is the Florida's second game of the year. For some reason, I was not feeling confident about that, about Virginia or against Virginia, whenever they play Virginia. A quality opponent who plays pretty much exclusively close games. So let's say it's a tie game with 4 minutes left in the second half. Who is playing at the four and five positions for Florida?
Oh man. So I hate to do this to people, but my opinion in that situation is Hanlockton will be in foul trouble. So he won't be able to do that. And so I think Florida's playing four around one with Samuel at the five. Now that could be beneficial because one of the things I'm real worried about, and we've gushed praise at Tyree Samuel. I did an interview with him. Couldn't have been more impressed with this young man. Think he's such an impressive guy. All that is to say, like in a low possession game against Virginia, like if he shoots more than 2 3-pointers and they both don't go in, like my big fear is it's a 2 3-point game in Charlotte and Tyree Samuel's wide open from downtown and like lets it fly instead of like getting the ball to Kugel or Clayton and somebody that's a scorer to like do that. Like Virginia wants him to shoot that shot. And so I love that you asked me about that because it's something that's been rolling through my head with him starting the season at the four.
Yeah. Well, and again, like I said Virginia because it was Florida's first game. I wasn't thinking too much even about their particular style, but I guess the question is really just, can you close out games with two big men? That's really just the question. And it'll be interesting to see if Florida trust that. It'll be interesting to see if those guys are both knocking down free throws, but more so it'll be, can they guard well enough? And it'll also be that cat and mouse game where a lot of teams are going to go small in the last couple of minutes. Does Florida try to play big and counteract it that way, or does Florida play the smaller lineup that might match up well or better with some of the teams they're facing? And then the next question I'll ask, if I pull up KenPom for the exact date. So Florida's first game of the SEC season, Kentucky on January 6th, is Tyree Samuel and Micah Hanlockton still the starting backcourt?
Whew. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say it is. And the reason I'm going to say that is because, I don't expect much from Shimshek. I've made that very clear. And so I don't think that's a factor. And then I don't know. I don't think Alex Condon is like on his way to a starting role early in SEC play, if at all. So, maybe I'm underestimating the possibility that they move Will Richard to the four a little bit, but I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I just was curious to see if you think that, much like the just cliche of it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Like, starting lineups can look different from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. So I just kind of was curious your faith level essentially and whether or not that's going to work. And and that'll be interesting too, just generally, like if the Gators do have rough patches at any point of the season, like you've kind of got your base. Like it's pretty easy to say like, okay, let's try a different front court with a different look. You could swap out point guards for sure if it's one of Zion Pullen or Walter Clayton on the bench to start the season. And you could also say, well, what if we start those two guys together with Riley Kugel and have Richard off the bench? Or do you play those three and Will Richard at the four with whoever at the five? Like there's at least some different lineups that could be tried out if things don't work. But this definitely shows, I would say, there's a determination from Florida to play a lot bigger. And I think that that's going to be something that they, really try to make work essentially at all costs. So yeah, that's it's certainly nice to get some of those insights. And I am now a lot more confident that you're going to be able to at least hear something, something about this secret scrimmage, which again, everyone will remember the famous secret scrimmage with North Carolina a couple of years ago, with that was a tsunami of misinformation from both sides of the media and fan bases. So if you know, someone's going to tell you the starting lineup, I'm hoping we can get some insights. And again, nothing too, it's not like we need to have 40 minutes of film or whatever, but just some indication of how the Gators did is going to be great.
Yeah, no, I'd love it. I'd love it. And you know, I love the Miami scrimmage is much more interesting to probably everyone than the FIU scrimmage. I know there was discussion with trying to play FAU, and FAU is big time now, y'all. They're secret scrimmaging the Tar Heels, so they didn't have time to play Florida.
And North Carolina went there.
Yeah. And UNC.
They went
UNC
on the road.
UNC to Boca, baby. And I'm sure FAU just whacks them. No, I'm kidding. Although, am I kidding?
they'd be favored, I think, on a. Well, I don't know if they'd be
in a road game. I'm sure they would be. If FAU,
that's true. Road game.
Yeah, if FAU were hosting UNC, if I were in Vegas, I'd favor FAU. That's for sure. And I mean, Dusty May versus Hubert is like, you know, some STS writer said, if I talked football with Mike Bobo, the Georgia offensive coordinator, it would be like Stephen Hawking talking to a kindergartner. And I said I felt it was mean to compare Mike Bobo to a kindergartner. That is definitely a tactical mismatch between Hubert Davis, systemless basketball East, the John Calipari offense East versus Dusty Bay. Man, you know, I know who I'd rather have drawn up plays, but in any event, the Miami scrimmage, much more interesting to me, just because, you know, I think the Canes have kind of an interesting front court for test for Florida, right? Like, we know about Wuga Poplar, like, obviously a guy that gives me big Corey Brewer vibes, sort of jack of all trades, pretty competent at everything. Not great really at anything, but and then Nigel Pack, we know he can score. But it's that front court matchup. Like, how good are Han Lockton and Samuel on the floor together? That's where I'd love to get some info from this scrimmage and some feedback, Eric.
Yeah, and again, I would just like, if one of the biggest questions that I have, I don't know if it's the coaching staff has the same question, is just, yeah, again, the viability of the front court with two centers, like, it's a great opportunity to play a team in Miami that plays super small. So, like, really quickly, the Gators are going to find out, okay, like, when we are playing a team that has a 6'6", 40% three-point shooter at the four and a 6'7", quick-footed Norchad Omier at center, like, what are we going to do? Are we going to be able to guard, like, just all that? Like, this is a great opportunity to see if this works. It's not like playing some, like, Big Ten team that has, like, a more below-the-rim, slow-footed front court that you could kind of hide any deficiencies that playing big would have for you. Like, that is why I really like the matchup as well. And going back to our previous conversation, Miami is another team that's, like, 39th to 45th in a bunch of the predictive metrics, and everyone kind of thinks that's crazy. So I definitely think Miami is a lot better than that. So
voters.
Yeah, that's true. maybe a rare, it's actually somewhat of a rare instance where I think the voters have it way more correct than all the previous metrics, which won't be the case when, you know, we're mid-season. But at least right now, this is actually why, you know, voting sometimes is really good for polls. So it's a good opponent. Happy that they're able to make this work. It's always funny to hear how what goes into this. And it's also cool that it is going from, like, a lot of teams playing by game secret scrimmages to, like, now you're seeing a lot of big boys trying to go up against each other behind closed doors. It's like, it's, you know, still behind closed doors as much as some stuff gets out. So I'm very interested to see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope I get some info on that. Because I'd love to know. I mean, Norchad Omir, they have a high four star. Well, I guess sort of an average four star, but high is an exaggeration. A top 100 four star in AJ Casey, who they think is going to make a pretty big leap in their front court as well. But even AJ is what, like 6'8", 6'9". So they're an undersized front court that Florida, you know. But then again, everybody in the ACC was like, ah, we're going to handle these guys. And then Norchad Omir just goes out and gets 18 rebounds a night, right? And like, it doesn't really matter. And by the way, this is why I'm still going to scream and yell until signing day that, you know, Florida's Sammy Yane is not really someone I want Florida passing on if it's like my program. But I know a lot of people are starting to believe in the Jaden Quantant's situation. So we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens. Obviously there are ties to the University of Florida there that I think are pretty interesting. I saw Florida basketball. Oh, the conspiracy theorists that are concerned about Twitter follows are really pumped right now. Cause like he's following a bunch of Florida people on Instagram. And then like his high school program is like following only Florida. They're following Florida Basketball Hour now. You know, like, oh, it's happening. Yo, he's going to Kentucky, y'all. All right.
Well, I thought there was like a hilarious, I think I'll say it was one of the recruiting sites. I don't know if it was 24/7 or On3, but one of their kind of classic, like Jaden Quaintance talks about the schools recruiting him most. And he was like, oh, well, you know, like the G League Ignite program offers, you know, this opportunity. And he's like, well, and, you know, Kentucky's a big program that, you know, I've kind of grown up seeing with success. And then it like came to Florida. And then it was like, I just started talking to Florida. We'll be interested to see what they have to say. And I thought it was like so funny that like I appreciated the honest answer, but it was like just like such a funny like so. So at the time I was kind of joking that I was like, well, like, looks like the crystal balls are going to start coming in. But again, I'm not like, I say that not to, I'm not like trying to clown Florida's recruiting. It's just like the timing of them getting involved. Like everyone knows that Florida got involved a little bit later.
Right.
And yeah. So like, and just the timing of this interview was such that, and I appreciate that this kid wasn't like, oh, you know, like love what they're doing. And like he didn't try to like lie. He kind of gave like a, hey, and at this point he already had an official visit scheduled to Florida before this time. So like, clearly, yeah. Florida did have something going here, but I just thought it was like, I just had never seen anything like that in one of their responses. So, but again, like these are the players that I think that Florida should go hard after, and if they lose, so be it. The opportunity to have that guy for 2 years, at least, that would be huge. That would be, I don't want to say program changing. That's not it. I wouldn't say that really about, you know, any prospects, any recruits these days, but like that would start to that would move things in the right direction, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean it would be huge. I still, you know, and I'm not doing the oh he's going to Kentucky to be super negative, everybody. I'm in like wait and see mode on Florida recruiting because I think it's good that they're targeting these players. They just have to land one of them. And that's a big part of it for me, I think. As far as the FIU scrimmage, I mean, interesting in the sense of like repetition is good because you're going to play Virginia pretty soon. There's not really anything that I think FIU does that's super complicated that is of value. They play very fast. So that, I guess, if you're interested in Todd Golden's comments at SEC Media Day that Florida will play faster, and you're snake bit by several years of Mike White saying that was in his DNA, then the FIU scrimmage is maybe the one for you.
Yeah. I like, this is nothing against Golden, but like I will forever have a immediate eye roll at any coach saying they are going to play faster because literally every coach says it. If anyone ever sees someone saying like, oh, we're going to play slow and down, playing more methodically, please send me the edit of that saying that. So, you know, will Florida play faster? Like, potentially it's possible. I didn't have any issues with Florida's pace last year, personally, but it's what you say as coaches. Everyone wants to play faster. Everyone says it. It does not mean a lot to me. So, hey, maybe it even just sets the tone playing a team that plays fast that early in the, for the first scrimmage. And you just start to build those habits of playing fast. You know, you build it early, maybe it happens, but hey, if Florida plays at the same tempo as they did last year, that is, that's okay with me. I would just want them to be more efficient. I don't care if it's in the half court or in transition. They definitely were in transition enough that they got enough looks that that should have been efficient. So they've got to be thinking efficiency, not just pace.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's well said. So that, I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of, we went into SEC media days a little bit, talked about the starting five. You know, the biggest thing is season's right around the corner. We're going to get Jake Winterman on board for a little over under soon. So Eric and I are trying to put that together, obviously before November 6th, get that out. I know we got a lot of stuff on our Patreon, patreon.com/FloridaBBHour. Sorry. And so we do encourage people to head over there and subscribe. We added a new membership tier, by the way, where you can get in and get any of the exclusive game day content for just $2 a month. So that's a pretty, I think that's a pretty good deal. Like, 'cause there's always going to be three thoughts after every game. There'll be some preview information, just more stuff than you're going to get on the podcast. So it's a nice little bonus and really comes out to $2 a month, which, you know, that's pretty cheap if you just want to do that for the season, but it's just a way to hop in. And if you like that content, you can get all the Patreon content by joining, you know, our six man club for $5 a month. So please support the Patreon. We haven't put any like tip jar or anything up on Twitter because I'm not subscribing to Twitter preferred. Like I don't, why would I do that? So yeah, maybe that's lazy of me. I don't know. I don't need any of that in my life. But I do need you subscribing to the Patreon in my life, Eric.
Yeah, I was going to ask you two things based on Patreon videos really quickly. Looking at stuff, doing some video for the players on the floor, on Florida's roster, what to kind of expect, what they can bring. So one of the ones that I was pretty excited to do, and I think a lot of people were excited to watch, was, of course, Riley Kugel. And yeah. I would say there was a couple like yellow flags about, well, I'll be interested in what you think, but I will call it yellow flags. Just kind of looking through, and again, this has to be viewed through the lens of like, this was a freshman who was thrown into a massive offensive role at the end of last season. So it's not like a Brandon McKissick or a Kyle Lofton where they've got a massive sample and you know exactly what they are before they set foot on Florida's campus.
Yeah.
But like for the, and for our lovely subscribers, they will have seen this. But Kugel's pick and roll numbers, pretty bad. His finishing at the rim numbers, pretty bad. I'm just curious. Like, I don't know if you watched the video or just if I were to tell you, I won't get deep into the numbers right now, but just what is your immediate reaction to seeing that his numbers finishing at the rim are pretty poor and his numbers out of pick and roll are pretty poor? Is that a concern to you at all? Is there anything that you kind of saw or can think about right now that you have thoughts about that? Or is it just something that's like, hey, he was a freshman, he's awesome, and with the offseason, he's going to come back much better?
Well, you know what I thought was interesting, Eric, is he was over three at the rim against Mississippi State. Now, they have Tolu Smith, right? Like, so when you're attacking the 10 against that team, like, it's harder. But I also felt like Chris Jans was kind of like, hey, man, like, let's see if he can finish at the basket. And then the number I was going to say, well, let me answer your questions first. That's more fair. And then same thing, like 1-for-4 at the rim against UCF in the NIT. So his last two games on the floor, it was 1-of-7 finishing at the rim. Yes, that concerns me a little bit because I think, you know, a lot of fans and me and Eric, I think we all get excited about what he can do off the bounce as a shooter. Like, it's nice to have a guy who can make shots off the bounce and off the catch. But Riley is also like, a legit 6'5" and he's built like a tank. So like, it would be really great if he would get to the foul line and have a lot of and one opportunities. And we're not seeing that. And this team needs that because they need the opportunity cost of like shooting more free throws, I think, until they prove to me that they really are going to space the floor and shoot. Right. So yes, I think that's totally legitimate. The one that concerned me was the rebounding. You know, we talked a lot about being a better rebounding team, and like his high in rebounds last year was 6, which he did against Alabama, which was, I think, maybe kind of his game where he showed that he could play against anybody. And then he had 6 in the road win at Georgia. But otherwise, like 2.8 rebounds a game is not very good for a guard that is 6'5" and built like him. Like, he needs to get down, dig down, and rebound better.
Yeah, that'll tie into the next player. I don't want to go on to this forever. I know we're getting late into the podcast, but this and maybe this is maybe our question has been answered a little bit by the starting lineup, because I was thinking about this before. You know, before you were able to get the starting lineup for the Miami game. But Tyree Samuel, let's talk. You know, there was Florida's own media day. They were putting out pictures. I think a lot of people saw Tyree Samuel standing next to, whether it was Alex Condon or Micah Hanlockton or even Alex Shimchick. And a lot of people were like, oh man, I don't know if Tyree Samuel's 6'10" or even close to it. And watching some of the film, that was something I was kind of pointed out as well for our Patreon when I was doing Tyree Samuel film study, was like, yeah, he's really like toned. He's muscular, but he's not that tall. And his block shot numbers are not very good. His rim protection numbers are not very good. And Seton Hall was, let me pull it up quickly. Seton Hall was, where is it? I'm so sorry. Seton Hall was 251st in the country in defensive rebounding. So they struggled much like the Gators did. And Tyree Samuel had a 16.7% defensive rebounding number, which is very bad for a center. And he, again, it's worth pointing out that he played essentially exclusively center for Seton Hall last year. You know, if he is going to play exclusively four, maybe that issue isn't, size, rebounding, shot blocking, rim protection. Maybe those issues aren't as big, and maybe that's why the Gators feel they have to have Micah Hanlockton out there. But are you concerned at all by any of what I just said?
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned about the rebounding. The defense, speaking of Trilly Donovan, like that was the thing that Trilly and I were talking about a little bit when he committed, was like, what a sensational defender he is in the paint. And I think that's true. Like, if you think of rim protection as like, let's block shots, then no, like Tyree Samuel isn't going to give you Colin Castleton type production. He's not even going to give you average production in that area. But if you're thinking like, I'm a really stout positional defender that is going to make it hard to score on me, and hopefully like my teammates can clean up the miss, like, his numbers, I think we talked about him a little bit on a deep dive analytics show we did earlier this summer, are quite good. I mean, his, 2-point percentage against numbers are fantastic. So like, I think that he can defend very well. I also think he's 6'8", if maybe 6'9". And I think he's a guy who relies on his brain and his understanding of basketball a little more than maybe our fans are expecting.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just pulling up his rim protection numbers. They're like very average. Like opponents shot 49% against him at the rim. National average would be like 55. So like he's in like the 60th percentile nationally. So like solid. I thought that they were actually not very good. I said that they weren't good like a minute ago, so that was obviously incorrect. But no, yeah, I think again, I'm not trying to just like poke holes or be negative or anything like that. But I do think like a lot of the conversation with Florida and what they, what they're going to be this year, a lot of it has been like, well, Riley Kugel's amazing. And then you kind of move on to like what the transfers are like. And I just kind of wanted to open up the possibility of like, well, what if Riley Kugel is good, but not awesome? And, right. And then even a player that I have said personally, well, I know what Tyree Samuel is. He's played a lot at the high major level. So like, yeah. I know what he's going to do at Florida, which is essentially what I've said. So I'm mocking myself here. You know, what happens if he's not? And again, I do think there is some concern to me of like, I think that, you know, I think that Florida's best lineups could very well have Tyree Samuel at the five, but I start to question that a little bit if the Gators are not going to be able to rebound, or they have other, you know, more physical 6'8", like your Coleman's from Texas A&M. The example I always use is like one of those player archetypes, but yeah, it was interesting for sure. And I know that there was a couple people like, oh, well, I think this player's on his tiptoes in Florida's picture. So like this guy's taller and like this guy's, oh, look, you can tell by the shadows, he's actually a couple inches further from the camera than this guy or whatever. So there was all that kind of discourse. Like, to me, it's just like, again, you can go look at the Patreon. Like, you don't need to look at a guy's media day pictures to say that he's smaller than listed. You know, go watch the film. And again, you can do that at Patreon. I just wanted to bring a couple of the discussions that we were having on the Patreon to the podcast and hear your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think it was interesting that Todd Golden said like that they specifically looked when they did their transfer evaluations at how they played against high level competition as well. Like, it wasn't just like they were checking analytical boxes. Like, I was a little relieved at that. And I would say, like, in Tyree Samuel's defense, like his numbers, for example, like if you watched him against UConn last year when Seton Hall beat them and then Seton Hall lost them by one on the road, like he was terrific in the road game and very good in the home game and averaged 12.5 and like 6 rebounds a game, right? Like, if he's going to play that way against those dudes, like, you know, and again, that was kind of, you know, none of us know who Truly Donovan is. It could be Eric Fawcett for all we know, but like, that was the thing that when I was talking to him, he was kind of like, well, he's just so smart, right? Like, and I do think that matters. I think that matters when you're a super senior and you have the physicality. He has physical tools, but nobody's going to say he's 6'10", except maybe Florida's media guy. And like, you know, he's not, we're not expecting Tyree Samuel, or at least I'm not, and I don't think Eric is, expecting him to be like an All-American caliber player. But what I expect him to be is a power six starter who's productive. And I think if he is that, that's great. He's done his job. What I worry about is this scenario that Eric actually brought up, where like, let's say Riley Kugel is good, right? But then we still get into this conversation that Eric and I have talked about. And I think Eric rightly brought up a few times before I mentioned it, which was like, Florida's transfer class is fine, but beyond Riley Kugel, there's not a star on this team. And I'm just not sure in the SEC, like if Riley Kugel isn't an all-league player or a first-team all-league player, then this Florida's team ceiling is probably a little more limited than maybe some of us thought.
Yeah, and that was essentially the concern that I had the other day, bringing up like when we were talking about recruiting, that's like you at some point have to hit home runs unless you are just a brilliant coach who gets the most out of your guys. And, you know, maybe that's going to be Florida's coaching staff, but it's certainly a lot easier to do when you've just got immense talent. So it was interesting to watch them. Like, I will say that like after doing the deep dive Riley Kugel film study, like I wish I could say I came away from it. Like, I wish I could say I came away from it more positive than when I came in, but I have to say, I thought it was going to be like, okay, Patreon, let's go watch like Riley Kugel cook a bunch of guys and hit step back threes and dunk. And then like very quickly it was like, oh, these pick and roll numbers are poor. These turnovers are really bad. Oh, he's like, anytime anyone hard hedges, oh, this is a massive problem for him. So like, there's plenty of stuff to work. So I do think like, and again, like, there was some discourse on Twitter the other day about like, oh, you know, I think he's going to be a 17 point per game player. And another guy's like, oh, I'd be surprised if he wasn't a 19 point player. And like, none of these guys have looked at scoring in the SEC over the last while to know how hard that is to do. But it did kind of inspire me to say like, okay, let's take an objective look at like what he was doing last year and see what he could be reasonably. And Yeah, I just wonder if the like Riley Kugel breakout narrative and just general talk about him has like maybe swung a little bit too far from like, hey, this guy's awesome. Look at how he closed the season. I think he could score 14 points a game and which would be awesome for the Gators, to like a lot of people being like, wow, like he wasn't the Athletic just put out their mock draft and he's 31st. That's disrespectful. And like, oh, he's second team SEC. That's disrespectful. Like that is a very reasonable outcome. That would be still really good. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so yeah. Yeah, look, so I'll be interested.
Yeah. I voted for him for first team all SEC. So like,
totally defensible.
Yeah. Like I'm not super concerned about it. I don't want anybody to listen to this and be like, oh God, there goes FBH. Those guys are so traumatized from doing this show for 6 years that they can't accept a great player. Like he's not a perfect player. Like we're not dealing with like, you know, Paolo Banchero here. it's the point, you know, like we don't exactly know for sure what we're going to get. And so that's all I'm saying. I do think we know what we're going to get pretty much with Tyrese Samuel though. And like, I think it's important that Eric is pointing out, like, this isn't an elite rebounder really, or even a plus rebounder necessarily. And it's not a plus shot blocker, but I do think he's a very good defender. And I think as smart a big man as Ford has had since maybe Vernon Macklin. Mm.
Yeah. Like I said, when the Gators were recruiting him, I was like, I didn't think people were excited enough about the idea that Florida had a chance to get him. But Florida landed him. I don't think there was enough excitement. I, of course, love Malik Grady, and I still joke a little bit about when he said, oh, well, it looks like there's a serviceable backup to Micah Hanlockton, and I still joke with him about that. And he, it's all out of love. But, it's interesting stuff. It's one of the things that the Patreon has been great for, getting into these deeper film.
Yeah.
Deep dive. So, just wanted to bring some of the good conversation we were having there to the podcast and hear what your thoughts are. But, now we've gone on for 70 minutes, Neil. So I think that's
all good. I have to say. Part of it's my fault for going on a 20-minute rant about the SEC. But I will say, as I get ready to let Eric set us off, that I get comments from listeners. I appreciate those so much about that. They love that when we just talk about the sport. And it was cool to hear from a couple guys like John Clay of the Lexington Herald Leader, who's going to join us this year for a Kentucky preview, and him saying like, man, it's cool when you guys just talk about hoops, like if you're not talking about Florida. And I was like, really? And so that was kind of nice to hear, like that not only that they actually know that our show exists, but they think that some of the stuff we do is pretty neat. So we appreciate that. We appreciate all our Patreons. And I will let Eric send us off.
Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.